Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast on the What Culture Gaming Podcast channel, no less. I'm your host, Scott Tailford, joined by Jules Gill.
Hey, guys.
And Josh Brown.
Hello.
And today, it's the beginning of Mental Health Week. Mental health raising awareness for all sorts of different things. Relating to mental health now, I've kind of just ran down a whole bunch of examples of mental health cropping up in video games for the better. I think all of these are worth talking about.
Yeah.
We kind of just threw different examples together. They're from all over the last sort of... I don't even know how even long these go back, but a long time. Even though it's a fairly new age thing to sort of delve into this sort of stuff in a meaningful way.
Yeah, it's interesting how retrospectively you can actually go back quite a long way and look at sort of video game characters who are either suffering with grief or another sort of like mental illness or how it's being portrayed. And I have to echo these thoughts that have been sort of populated at the moment where video games as a medium doesn't necessarily treat mental health in a very considered way. It actually
sometimes
is the exception to the rule that these games that we're going to be talking about today are. And I do feel that this hopefully is showing that there is a changing of the guard and changing of the writers and how you approach this sort of very difficult material to make sure that in the future people will find this more relatable, because gaming, films, music, it reflects the society that it's a part of, and we are now sort of waking up to the fact that it's like it is okay to talk about mental illness and things like that.
Yeah, I think it's been something that especially the last few years especially, like, just everyone seems to be more able to talk about the things that ail them in a very honest and frank way that we've always had, or I've always had, being a giant emotional nerd over the years anyway, that I just think it's heartwarming to see. There's nothing better than conversation, so I've always been a big proponent of it. I'll quickly mention that the stream that we're doing this week is in aid of Mind. You can go to justgiving.com/fundraising/whatculture to donate whatever you want and check out the stream tomorrow night. I believe it's between 4 and 6 p.m. BST /GMT,
and
wherever
it's
we
be,
are.
It's going to be Rich, Rach, and Adam Cleary, and they're going to be playing Celeste. So it's going to be a really fantastic time.
Yes.
I'm hoping that people will come sort of support them, support the channel, and basically just share stories, and we'll all just have a nice big chat about
that. Speaking of Celeste, that is the first one I've got down here. I've got about 8 to 10 examples. Some are games that are specifically about mental health and mental awareness, things like Celeste, but other ones are just like games that delve into themes around anxiety or depression or fear or whatever. There's a whole bunch of stuff in here that I think is all just worth raising up as the handful of times or whatever the games have tried to tackle these subject matters. So the first one I've got down is Celeste. There will be spoilers for the games that we're mentioning just because some of the big plot points that we're delving into are specifically about spoilers. But Celeste, I mean, the thing that blew me away the most about that is that they literally wrote, they literally made a game, Matt Forson made a game, where the challenge in that game is overcoming your worst self, your propensity to give in to worry and doubt and all that kind of stuff. And it's stuff that like I've like dealt with loads, having been bullied when I was younger and things like that. And I just think that making a game where you twin like really hard platforming gauntlets to overcoming, you know, feelings of doubt and sadness and everything, that absolutely wrecked me in a very good, you know, I'm not the only one kind of feeling this type way. So
it's great the way they deal with it. Like that game is about, you know, her splitting off into these two different versions of herself, and like there's the assumption that there's a good version, there's a bad version, but at the end it's not sort of about battling that or trying to get rid of it. It's like learning to live with it and learning to synergize it and learning that you can learn not only from like the good parts of it, like the good feelings and emotions, but like learn from the negative ones. It's essentially the plot of Inside Out now I think about it. Sadness and happiness,
because it's strange where a lot of people will immediately think that these sort of negative emotions and negative thoughts. They're something to be abolished from like the brain or just the body in general. But it definitely is about learning to accept your flaws and learn from your mistakes and moving on from them. Because if you try and deny that they exist, they can come out in really
weird... That makes it even worse.
Yeah, yeah. Like repression, effectively. Yeah. It can come out in very, very odd ways.
One of my favourite scenes in this is... Because you always assume, like I said, I'm using the whole, like, you know, embrace your worst self or whatever. But you never get those, like, that's... specific split. If you guys can hear that on the camera, but someone's got a very loud car outside.
Yeah, weird.
In the game, though, one of my favorite scenes is where she finally, Madeline is the main character, finally has a conversation with this other self.
Yeah.
I'm only going down the hole. It's your worst self or whatever because she's like black. She's like a demon. It's obviously the way that Madeline perceives her and whatever. But
it's
one of my favorite
clarity of it.
One of my favorite scenes is where they finally have a conversation with each other and she just sort of says like, "Look, I never really took the time to understand you." And then her her other self is saying the same thing. It's like, "Well, I always thought you were too weak, and I always thought that we couldn't kind of live together and harmonize." But it's like, obviously there are, you know, it's part of the human experience to worry and be doubtful.
Yeah.
And it's worthwhile taking those, you know, those mentalities into any situation because you should think things through. You should be aware of different things. You should be anxious about certain things. But it's all about moderation and learning to give on top of it.
Like anxiety, people use it in such a negative context now, and you can see why, because it affects so many people in a negative fashion. But it is the body's way of just trying to make you aware of a surrounding. It's saying, maybe I shouldn't do this. Maybe it is that. It's just when it becomes a crippling thing that it's...
And that's one of the things that they like just hammer home in that scene is that they can work together and they can fully understand each other. And then in the game, you get given, you can learn to jump even further and reach places that you couldn't before.
Yeah.
And you're playing as that unity of like that realization that we've probably all had where you get through something and you can just like, you know, go forward as one. And playing that was like one of the most empowering things in gaming history for me.
I love that it kind of goes a bit further as well. It's sort of about like taking responsibility for it. Because I remember when I was first coming to terms with like my mental health issues and stuff, and it was very easy to kind of blame any negative traits or negative actions, negative behavior that I had on that sort of part of it. Like, I'm really sorry, but that's just, I can't help it because that's just part of who I am. Mm-hmm. But then it's sort of, I love the way Celeste makes you sort of wrangle with that and kind of accept that. No, it is not like two separate entities. It's you as a person, both negative and positive, and it's learning to like live with that and embrace that and sort of not viewing it as something separate to you, but like taking responsibility for it and like acknowledging it and properly not just trying to ignore it, which I really loved.
I think if you go down the lines of separating yourself from your anxiety issues, then you start giving that power over control over what it is, and like you say, it's not a part of you, it's a thing that stops you from doing it. Whereas if you accept it as much as you can and move with it and just go, I'm having a good day, I'm having a bad day, and I'm making people aware of that, then it makes your whole general outlook on life a lot easier to get through. And I love the fact that the game actually like promotes that same sort of thing, but through gameplay.
That's beauty of it.
Just controlling it.
Because the games on this list that we're going to be talking about today, they're not, all of them aren't just going explicitly, this is what it is.
I cast
about
a very wide net.
Yes, but they're about teaching you things about yourself through how you play games, because that's the medium in which it's the most visceral. It's you actually controlling what's going on.
And it's like, I mean, I have a very close relative of mine who struggles a lot with anxiety and depression, and especially the last couple of years. And so, like, you know, going through therapy sessions with them or having conversations with them about what they've been through and trying to get back to the crux of, like, addressing mental health is to get back to, like, you want to address comfort. Yeah. You're trying to get to a point of, like, just comfort again. And something like Celeste was instrumental in understanding what that person was going through. If not just for the visualization of, you know, this is the them that I grew up with, and this is like this other self that's manifesting, and the kind of the war between the two of them. And that just kind of helps like in, on a day-to-day basis of like, why aren't you still the person that you were when I was growing up? Totally understanding it. So even on like a wider sense, I think Celeste's life lessons are like immortally helpful.
There's such an elegance to its storytelling, I think, as well. There's like such a simplicity to it, and yet it doesn't lack the depth or complexity of what like you need to bring to like wrangle things. I remember like you were saying before, it's only became like recently that it's been, people are open to talking about this stuff and making art about it, and I think like the way Celeste does it sort of really speaks to, I don't know, I suppose a younger generation in particular. I think if I had that game growing up, I think I would have been able to process and understand things a lot.
So helpful.
Yeah, I think it's going to be like that, because I mean, when I was growing up, like, there's obviously media and games still that tackle like mental health issues and mental illness, but not in such a direct, succinct, easy to digest way. And like you said, Jules, the fact that it puts you in the game itself and makes its mechanics part of its story and theme in delivering that message overall is like chef's kiss.
Yeah. I'll give it a big old chef's kiss. So yeah, another one I've got down here, because essentially I try to think of games that present or go near the idea of addressing certain themes to do with mental health, and then what are their takeaways and sort of, you know, however they sort of tackle each individual theme. So the next one I've got down is Gone Home, because I think the whole story of addressing knowing who you are and who you really want to be in society, in the world and stuff, all of Gone Home is set up to be ostensibly at the outset more of a horror. It's meant to be you're returning to this house and you don't know what's going on, your family are missing, and there's a note on the front door from your sister saying, oh, I'm sorry, but I've had to go, like, please forgive me, kind of thing. But the twist with that is, as you find various audio diaries and, you know, you find out what was happening when you were away, the reality is that your sister was actually just coming out and was realizing that she's in love with someone and she's going to be a lesbian, and it's like, it was her kind of like awakening. Mm. And then the very end, the big twist or whatever, is that she's actually gone off to live her life with her lover. And that was the thing. There was nothing to fear at all. It was just, a lot of it was in your head, or like, a lot of it came through in the way that we play as this first person exploration of a mansion or whatever. But I think that was one of the best, like I don't know, that was one of the most empowering, heartwarming messages in recent gaming too.
Because it shows you through the gameplay again that you put up your own mental barriers, and it's the assumptions, and it's assumptions that this game is trying to overcome. Mm-hmm. It's assuming that a person is a certain way. It's assuming that a mindset is in a certain place, and it's just breaking that down again and just showing there's nothing to be afraid of if it's handled carefully.
Yeah, like, and I think the way that the... stupidly, I can't remember the name of the sister. I know that you play as Caitlin Greenbrier. I think it might be Sarah. But when you find all her audio diaries and stuff, you have her very, like, just very natural thoughts. I mean, I remember that they cast someone who was pretty much the same age as the person going through high school, realizing she had feelings for someone else, and then realizing that they're reciprocated. And, like, that's a very universal theme of, like, falling in love with someone. But also, she goes through the reality of where she lives is, like, not necessarily the most progressive place. Yeah. Or, you know, am I able to come out and whatever? And again, I have like relatives that have gone through that stuff too. So it's, again, I think it's a very universal, worthwhile message to put out.
Yeah, I think that tackles like sort of the breakdown in like family communication really well. Well, maybe not even necessarily the breakdown, but just the general lack of it. Like,
well, they show everyone else has their own lives.
Exactly. Everyone's got their own lives, and no one seems to fully know what anyone else is doing. If that makes sense. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of isolation in that story, which I think is really good. Like, it's a lot of like her discovering this for herself, by herself, and feeling unable to talk about anything to like her parents in like a kind of...
I mean, she's literally leaving like tape recorded notes. Yeah. Like, that's her diary. It's not shared with her best friend or anything.
It's clever, just the use of the house as a setting as well, because the house is like, if you imagine it like a brain, it's compartmentalizing things. It's got different issues in different areas that get explored and open up. And you'll notice that when you go through the game, the house feels more open the more you sort of like spend time in it and like move around it.
And especially with, like I said, with the ultimate like twist being that there was nothing to fear at all. Yeah. You are fully able to explore that house and just take all of it in. And if you twin that with the metaphor of being comfortable with everything in that house, then it kind of comes full circle.
I'm just going to say, like, it just brings back, I can't remember who said it, but it was like, you know, what's the difference between a house and a home? Mm. Like, you know, a house is literally the building itself, and the home is what you put in it, as in the life and the people and the things. So,
I love the sort of empathetic sort of position.
I wish empathetic was a word. I use it all the time. It's not a word.
Just give me something. pretend I said something smart.
It is for now.
I like the perspective that comes from as well, because obviously it's like the sister, like going back. And I love that you get the insight into there are all these family members, and she's sort of uncovering more about her sister that she never knew before, which I think is like true if you have siblings. Like, I didn't know anything about my brothers and sisters really growing up, other than the fact that they were my brothers and sisters. And then when you get older, you realize they have a life of their own. I think that's the same with sort of friends growing up as well. And I think once you sort of get over that barrier and you get that sort of like, I don't know, sense of empathy, like realization that, oh God, there are other people like me going through the same struggles as me. They might be different, but we're all kind of doing it on our own. And that sort of like connection to reach out at the end of that story, like, you know, she finally understands her sister and stuff, which I think is awesome.
I think there's a way that we sort of like, I don't know, for me, like, growing up, there's a lot of ways that people interact with each other that are very like surface level, whereas I'm always like, I'm into a million different things. Are you into a million different things? Here's a bunch of stuff. But I think that like as we've come together, like whether it's through the internet or just having more like open and honest conversations, even with things like mental health, people are more open and honest these days. Or I find that they are.
It's weird because like you've got the very weighted scales. The people who are now in a position where they feel more comfortable to be able to talk about themselves in a very open and honest manner, And then you've got the other side, which is like the YouTube comments that are very, very horrible and things like that. So there is always a balance, but it is great to see that people are just going, that exists, but I'm not going to be a part of that. Mm. So I'm going to be the other side of things.
Mm-hmm. Another one I've got down is Night in the Woods, which I sort of picked
again,
because...
Again, talking about friends, like sort of like...
Yeah. And which like I love. Like, I absolutely adore Night in the Woods. But that is all about your personal comfort and the idea of like the different expectations that society or different hierarchies or career goals might put on you that you maybe aren't even okay with.
Yeah.
And going through with it just because that's what you're supposed to do.
The game teaches you that failure is okay
as long as you
keep going, because it's something that like I've spoken about a lot with my friends, that a great deal of pressure is put on the younger generations now to succeed because the previous generations have already succeeded. Mm. Like, it's the same thing where when we were growing up, there were probably older kids who were looking down on us, and now society's telling us almost to look down on the millennials and stuff like that. But I hate that term, and I hate all of the stuff that comes with it, saying that, like, you know, they're lazy and they don't have that. It's not true. Some of the most creative people are yet to emerge, sort of thing. So Night in the Woods is teaching you, like, even though you will come across not that much support from people who are older than you, if you stick together and move as a unit and find your sort of like links, social links, you can go really far.
Yeah, like, or these different goals and expectations that get put on you. Like, it is okay to take your time. Like, there's like you said, there's a lot of pressure. And I remember when, like, you probably the same thing when we were all growing up, where it's like, okay, pick your vocation, pick your career path, and do it right now. Yeah. And it's like, I mean, this job didn't even really come together until the last like 5-6 years. So, you know, you spend so long assuming that you're supposed to know exactly what you're doing, but now, you don't need to.
At the time of recording this, the GCSEs are going on, aren't they?
No,
like,
idea.
It's that, like, I know that there's exams coming up very soon for kids.
Right.
So I'm just thinking, like, I remember the amount of pressure that I was put on.
Think it's like the test of your life?
And it's like, especially when you do your mocks the years before.
Yeah.
And it's like, you say you didn't do too well on them. You're like, I'm going to be an idiot and I'm going to be stuck. I'm not going to do this. Or like, this is going to define the rest of my life. And do you know what the worst thing is that doing the exams and going back into the class to speak with people, and then your teacher just going like, cool, right, so you've done that, now we're going to this. It's like, what, so it was nothing then? Like, you've told me that this was like the be-all and end-all of my life, we're going to go back and learn about something else. Like, it's your brain can't...
School's like talking about like permanent records and stuff too. Like, what is this permanent record? Are you in touch with the FBI? Like, I dropped a pencil once and disrupted a classroom.
But it's
now
like,
it's
when, when you put anything under that amount of pressure, is it any wonder that you see people sort of quit and give up because they feel that they're not going to succeed? So they try and take control of the situation and quit themselves. Mm-hmm. But that's what games like Night in the Woods and stuff like that are trying to address, which is like, it is okay to step away from stuff and take your time because you can choose what you want to do. At the end of the day, no one is living your life other than you.
That's the thing that I love. Like, the thing that I love the most is that like they steer right into that and just say, look, if you need to take some time away from something, that's more than fine. It's okay to prioritize your friends and your comfort and all that kind of thing. There is an overall sensibility in Night in the Woods for you will get there eventually.
Yeah.
And I think that it's a very, very specific line to walk because they're not championing the idea of giving up, but they are saying you can take your foot off the gas and it's fine. Yeah. I loved how specific and nuanced all that stuff was.
They were quite clever in how they had the other friends as well, because some of them were like very lazy or they weren't doing other bits and bobs, so it was trying to like counter, like subtly just go like, you know, like you can err too far on the stepping, taking a step away. So it's like, don't go too far, but just ease up on the gas, like you're saying.
Yeah, but it's just, I mean, it's that whole thing, it's that like that small town living kind of thing where whenever we go back to our respective like villages and houses and stuff, you tend to come back across older friends and they're completely comfortable. They have their lives and that's just as good as chasing any massive high rolling career or whatever.
Yeah.
Not that I'm saying that's what we have, but you know what I mean? Like there's that whole idea that like, as long as you're comfortable, that is more than okay.
I love how they encapsulated like that small town vibe, like you were saying, because it's like when we go home, do you ever feel like, wow, this town is small? Like I've been.
You get more used to the city.
Yeah, I've been around this place for so long that it feels like it's just like it's a microcosm. And you know everything that's going to happen, and it does feel safe. But in that same sense, it feels restricted as well.
Yeah, I also love that though for like sitting holiday periods, like going home for Christmas or whatever.
It's
like,
the bubble.
Yeah, the bubble.
You sit down, you go like, oh, I can turn off everything else.
Yeah.
And I just exist here now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's something I wrangle with all the time. And like when I was growing up in that bubble, I wanted nothing more than to get away from it.
Same.
I was so scared of being stuck there, even though like I'm sure there's like loads of happiness from there, but I was so scared of just like, I don't know, just that would be it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Which was so frustrating for me. But now I enjoy going back and like getting knowing everyone. It's just a, I don't know, that sense of balance, I guess. Like you don't want to err too far the wrong way, but then you don't want to pursue this like, I remember for ages I wanted to do well at uni. I wanted to pursue like a good career. And then I just realized at some point I was not It wasn't making me happy. You know what I mean? At some point, who was I actually like living for? If that makes sense. Yeah. Like, I'm not just living to get like a good job or to like, you know, live in a big city or like an apartment. I do none of those things. I don't live in a big fancy apartment.
But I think that's the thing that they address is like, you know, that whole deal. Oh, break out of the bubble and don't be confined by the bubble. It's like, well, that can also be a comfort blanket, and that can be something that you look forward to going back to. And yeah, it is just prioritizing yourself. I totally recommend Night in the Woods wholeheartedly. Now, the next one is Life is Strange, which Jules, you recommended. Now, I haven't finished season one of Life is Strange, but I do know this whole thing. But this is more darker subject matter involving Kate Marsh.
So Kate Marsh is a character that you come across in Life is Strange. She's from a fundamental Christian family who's very, very sort of like, you know, anti-sex, anti-drugs, like celibacy and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So she's at the university that you join, and unfortunately, she starts at the very beginning of the game looking very depressed, and it gets revealed from Max's perspective that what's happened is that she went to a party, she got drugged, and was then videotaped making out with people, which obviously goes against like the drug taking, her sexuality, and her like faith as well has been put into question. And it also means that she's now become a laughing stock. People are laughing at her, and it's a horrible situation to be in, because her family also start to distance her because they only receive the tail end of the reports because they aren't in a familial state where they can talk about this sort of situation without the parent going, "You are a child. I told you to do something and you're not doing it." So she unfortunately withdraws from everything, and it leads to a choice, if depending on what choices you've made in the game prior, of Kate being on top of a roof and she wants to commit suicide. It's got that bad. Mm-hmm. But you can save her if you take the time to listen to what is going on with her and basically prove that you are a friend that cares about her outside of this. Mm-hmm. But it's really quite heavy. Like, it affected me, and I played through it because I managed to save her, but I went and watched what happens if you don't. And they don't shy away from it. It's horrible. Mm. Like, the game, the writers of the game were clearly setting out to be like, choices do
this
matter.
This can happen.
Your choices matter, full stop. And they do affect other people as well. And I think that that's something that is a very important life lesson, that it is okay to pursue your own happiness. Like, I feel that that is fundamental to our lives in general. But you shouldn't do that at the expense of other people. You should, if you can, be as empathetic as possible, and you should reach out and make sure that you're there for them. Like, don't beat yourself up if you can't be there for your friends all the time, because unfortunately we can't, we are just human. But just, it shows there that even little things, like
you're just trying,
reaching out and just saying, "Hey, what do you want to do?" or like this, trying to get that connection really does have an impact further down the line.
I think addressing, like, I mean, like I said, it's extremely like dark subject matter, but I put so much worth on conversation, on just being there for someone. Like, it is the most therapeutic, cathartic thing possible if handled at the right time.
The game treats it as a dramatic climax to one of the
somewhat inevitably given the medium, I guess.
Yeah, and I understand that. But what they did that I thought was quite commendable was almost like a bit of fourth wall breaking, where they give you in the journal a helpline to call if you two are experiencing these sort of things.
A real life one as well.
So I really thought that was good that they didn't just try to be like, "Oh, here's a really dramatic thing and we've used this to play it off as a big crescendo." What they've done is said, "This does happen. You might be in a similar situation. If you feel like you are being bullied or pressured by your school and not being listened to, there are people who will listen to you and want to speak to you." And I think that's really important.
That's one of the biggest fundamental truths of all of these conversations, is that, people do care always.
I mean, like, I've heard some of the things that have troubled me the most is when I've talked to people about how upset and depressed they are, and they come out with, "I didn't want to bother anyone," or "I didn't want to speak to people because I wasn't sure if they was going to be there." But I can assure you, like, anyone watching this as well, like, people do want to talk to you. It's not a case of you are bothering them or it getting in on their lives. No one wants you to be in a point where you might kill yourself. No one wants that.
No, so I think it's that ability to be able to reach out. I've never had that not be reciprocated or not be worthwhile in the long term. Like, you guys will both know, and literally everyone who knows me, if I ever, like, I over worry and focus on things for way too long, and I'll always get back in touch with you guys.
Honestly, it's one of your sweetest
all the time. I'd be like, "I'm sorry, but just to make sure that text message, that was what I meant, and just that bit's not meant to be, I don't know, whatever." I'm always like, I have to like clear that up, and then when someone's like, "It was totally fine, I didn't give it a second thought," I'm like, "Oh, thank God."
Yeah.
Oh, it was fine.
I know,
And but that's the thing, those little back and forth reciprocations for me are extremely valuable, but that's a very specific thing to me. But it does, it for me, it's like the only thing I could pass on is just talk to everybody. I mean, it's the best way to be.
We are quite privileged in the fact that we do have good support networks here. I feel like I could talk to you guys about anything, regardless of what it
is. You almost ate his lunch on you before.
I almost did, yeah.
In the middle of the recording.
But I do understand that there are going to be people out there that don't necessarily have the friends and family side of things. Even they could be part of the problem. But I just have to reiterate that there are professional services out there that do care because they are made nearly 100% of volunteers. People want to be there to speak to you if you have a problem.
And plus, having been through similar therapy sessions with close relatives, like most people who are doing the volunteer work have been through it themselves and come on the other side and have a whole bunch of life lessons to pass on.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
It's like, it's difficult, isn't it? It's like when you're in that position, like you don't, like you said, you don't want to sort of like try to, I don't know, you infringe on someone. You don't want to be a burden or anything, but like, you're not at all. Like you said, there are people out there, and even if like you've been maybe failed a few times before, maybe if like, yeah, you've got a crap friend or you've tried one of these services, like not all of these institutions are great, but more often than not, they are worth sticking to. You might get a crap counselor one time, but that shouldn't put you off like the entire thing. Like there are people out there who are like, just so empathetic and so kind and so considerate and so compassionate. And it's just,
you do kind of have to meet them in the middle to some degree, or you eventually get to meet them in the middle. But I think one of the, just to randomly throw out advice in, it would just be diet as well. One of the things that I just, like, I thought was massively helpful was just have a good day's food.
Yeah, I've noticed
you feel way more revitalized.
Like people use comfort eating quite a lot with stuff like this, and that does set you into a bad spiral. I used to do that and like it really like messed with my weight and my head at the same time. So getting control of things, simple things like that, actually does help you. Because it, at the end of the day, most of these things can be helped with structure in general. And just having a structure, a routine to follow can really help you get through the day-to-day. And food is a fantastic...
Yeah, I'm just going to fill that in. Yeah. Sadly, that there aren't any games that champion... Well, there are games that champion food overcooked, but there's not that many games that champion the...
That's the weird thing about it. That's why it's so hard to kind of capture mental health and mental health issues in like games as well, because it manifests in so many different ways. Like my own mental health is like weirdly intrinsically tied to food, like you said, but in such weird, toxic ways like that I didn't even understand until like maybe a year or two ago. Then I was like, why is all of this like adding on? Like, what's the root cause of why I'm eating like this or why I'm not eating like this or why I'm indulging in this or why I'm not indulging in this? And like it all came back to, oh, hang on, it's all tied to my mental health. And that was a weird revelation to find out. But like once you do unravel it through, whether it's like through on your own or through support networks, through help, like institutional help, professional help, it's then you can start like treating it and like compartmentalizing it and treating it with structure and stuff. And it's like obviously not a be-all end-all overnight sort of response, but it does help massively.
There's that crystallizing moment, isn't there? And I don't know, like it sounds like it's affected you directly, but I don't know about yourself, but when you actually can finally put some sort of finger on why you feel a certain way, like, because trying to pin that down in my brain at the moment is like it's impossible. But when you suddenly just go like, oh, it's that has annoyed me and it set me in this chain of events got to here, like mad.
I think that, I think all those, the diagnosis side of it, I think is just fascinating and like endlessly fascinating. That might be something for a different podcast. I'd love to talk about the wider side of this because it is the most fascinating topic anyway. As another game that I'm going to throw in though, to keep this all about the video games, but in a positive way, is Persona. Because you have Persona 4 and 5, which is kind of twins with Celeste, the idea that you know, you can harness your worst parts, your other self, or your doubts and insecurities and everything else. In Persona, the very like fabric of that game is your summonable persona is the manifestation of your worst elements or the things you're trying to hide. But in addressing them head on, you learn how to control them and wield it and fight back against the demons. I also fight everything else.
Also love in Persona 5, obviously, you're going into people's minds, so you get to see their sort of like their fascinations, their sort of fixations, and get to undo or change them to make them better people in the long run, or to avoid or to expose something that's going on. I'm not saying that like the Persona 5 treats people with complexes very fairly, because sometimes just oust them and just say like this person's going to go to the police, but they have done pretty horrible things. So I think it's a hard balance on that one.
Yeah, I'm only cherry picking that one thing out of Persona 5.
There is a Futaba as well, one of the characters who deals with a lot of anxiety, and I know that going through the plot addresses that in a bit more head on. So it does. They do address it, and they do show that there is like positivity around being with friends and stuff like that. So
one of the ones that I threw in, because it's one of the only games that really put mental health and like a different state of the character, a different state of mental health in the game, is Hellblade, which is just specifically about...
I've yet to play that. I haven't played that.
Okay, yep. So me and Josh have both finished it. But that is specifically about psychosis and what Senua goes through and the horror of that. And they, on the dev side, they did a hell of a lot of research with specific people who had experienced psychosis to try and get across what that's like going through it. What do you think of Hellblade?
I really loved it. Mm-hmm. I have like, I know people who suffer from very similar things, whether it's psychosis, like schizophrenia and stuff. And I thought, obviously, I've not had that experience firsthand, but from what I can gather, like, I thought they did a really, even if it wasn't 100% accurate or whatever, they did such an admirable job of trying to use the unique mechanics of video games as a medium to present that and try to get you from that empathetic level again and try to like get you in that same headspace and get you to understand, because it's so difficult when someone's got a physical ailment or like a disease or something and you can see it on them.
Yeah.
That's so much easier, I think, to sort of understand and sort of get to grips with, because you can actually see it. You know it's affected. But when it's in your brain, like we were just saying, there are so many ways it can manifest or entangle or sort of attack you that you just cannot get. I cannot be looking at you guys without knowing beforehand like what is going on. Mm-hmm. And I thought this does such a fantastic job of getting you in that headspace. Mm-hmm. And even if it's not, like, again, it might not be 100% like truthful or like the best representation, but it tries and it does get you to think about it.
I think its intent is incredible. And I think that the thing that you come out of that from or with or whatever, just is that respect for like being able to go through it, like, or being able to sort of hold yourself together at all, even though that game does deal with her sort of like gradual kind of breakdown. But little things that they showed in the making of, like that idea of like, if you're undergoing psychosis, you might like seeing symbols or kind of, you know, not necessarily knowing what to focus on in terms of reality. They make those into puzzles and things that are in the game to sort of go through as well. I guess I kind of want to commend it as one of the only games I can think of that really put like a mental state at the forefront. I don't think hardly any other games have done that. To mention something else, I had down here Borderlands 2, which I think was one that Jules mentioned.
Yeah, so in the Tiny Tina DLC, you know, where you get to play as the Dungeons and Dragons Vault Hunters and whatever it's called, their version of it. Don't know if you played that DLC.
I've not. I don't like Borderlands much.
That's fair enough.
I've played Borderlands 2, but not the DLC.
That's fine as well. So basically what it is they all go on an adventure, and it starts off with them playing a in-game version of Dungeons and Dragons, and it becomes manifested and real. And as it goes on, you start like getting glimpses of, because Tiny Tina's the one that's the dungeon master, she keeps on like mentioning Roland, and Roland was obviously killed in the main Borderlands 2 plot, but at the time you're so busy destroying stuff and blowing up robots and wanting to kill Handsome Jack that you don't really necessarily have time to dwell on it. Well, it turns out as this goes on, there's quite a poignant moment when you realize that the game she's playing is actually her way of dealing with the grief that she's got from losing Roland. You are inside her mind because she is effectively telling you everything that's going on, and it literally manifests as she tells you. But this shining knight of Roland appears to slay the dragon, but unfortunately he dies. And it's about her literally at the end, all black, on her knees, and she's just going like, oh, I actually have to kind of accept that he's gone. He's not coming back. We can't just bring him back to life now. And it was a really like touching moment in a game that is very silly a lot of the time. So I did not expect it, but I felt that it was a a great interpretation of the concept of grief.
You see, yeah, things like that was, like I said at the beginning, like cast very wide net. Because one of the ones that came to mind, which I'll throw alongside this, is actually in Mortal Kombat 10. Because I kind of want to address this, like, because obviously mental health manifests in a whole bunch of different ways, but you have things like fear and doubt and anxiety and worry and not belonging somewhere, and, you know, they can kind of snowball. It's a very small part of Mortal Kombat 10, but one of the new characters, Kung Jin, who I think is Kenshi's son, he's actually gay. He's like the first Mortal Kombat gay character in Mortal Kombat. And they don't really make a big deal of it, which I quite like. I like that they just weave it through the story alongside everything else. But they do have one great cutscene between him and Raiden, where he's talking about wanting to join the Shaolin monks, and he literally says, like, I can't, they'll not accept me for who I am. And even without addressing it head on, Raiden just says that, you know, they only care what's in your heart, not whom your heart desires. And it's just like, even in Mortal Kombat, you kind of have them going near this idea of, you know, people, these big Shaolin warriors can still feel, you know, can still worry and can still feel like they don't belong. And I like that, even just as a little addendum to everything else that we're addressing. Like, even a character from Borderlands can still be consumed by a very human emotion. So even though they're not at the forefront like Hellblade or Celeste or Gone Home, then I still think it's worthwhile pointing out that these ideas can be in games.
I just don't think that there are some video games out there that do allow you to connect so directly with your emotions. And I feel like that is the stepping stone to being able to address it, because it's putting a finger on it, it's putting a definition on it. It's very hard, as we've discussed. But sometimes just being able to get yourself into an emotional state that allows a sort of release is good. That's why we find ourselves as a society drawn to films like The Road and games like that, Dragon Cancer. They are tearjerkers, incredibly sad films. And normally, why would you ever want to put yourself into a state of sadness? It doesn't make any sense. But it's the release you get from it that helps process things.
Something like the end, by the end of Celeste, I was just an emotional wreck. But I think it's like you do sort of sometimes need that pressure valve to be let off. And like some games steer into that more than others.
That Tiny Tina's thing sounds like so cool, because I think that reflects, like, at least, I don't know about you guys, I don't want to speak for everyone, but for what I do, I learn to come to terms with this. I learn to explore things like this, like through art, whether it's games or films or music or literature or whatever. Like, when I was growing up and I was trying to deal with all this stuff because I didn't really think I could talk to anyone else. Thankfully, we've progressed from there. But I think there is just art, such a great way to go through these sort of, come to terms with these kind of like lofty topics on your own in isolation, because you are connecting to something that someone else has created. And even just that, even if you were doing it on your own, that sort of implies that, oh, there is someone else, at least one other person who has felt these feelings before.
Yeah, and it's just like that whole idea of like art being escapism, but it tends to be in gaming twinned with empowerment. Whereas, like, you know, that whole idea of, like, you know, we'll probably listen to like any different album that you can lose yourself in, and the lyrics maybe speak to you or whatever, and that gets you through a certain time. There was always that assumption across the last few decades that gaming was not up there with music or wasn't up there with film. But I think we've pretty much got there over the years. And there are examples. Nearly all these are very new examples. But there's nothing to say that, like, a game can't be held up there too. And, you know, they're still written by people who have been through these things. They're still pulling from real world experiences. And yeah, there's nothing wrong with feeling things through gaming. It doesn't have to just be about blasting stuff with a giant gun.
Even then, what you said about, like, empowerment, there's a great bit in Hellblade towards the end where you were just, you're hitting these insurmountable odds. You just keep fighting, you keep fighting. And, like, the way it uses its mechanics to either empower you or disempower you, because there's one point where you can't actually win. You can kill as many things as you want, but it will eventually overcome you. And I thought that was quite smart, and it made you think about things in a way that you perhaps wouldn't if that was just a passive experience, if you're watching it play out.
I was going to say, as the final point, like, how do you see any ideas that you'd want from games going forward? Like, because the examples that I've got here, like, we have things where the idea of mental health and, I don't know, different facets of mental health are weaved into the story, like Borderlands and Mortal Kombat. You have things like Hellblade, where it is the story, and understanding it even on a visual sense, like, they're trying to represent a state of mental health. I guess it's just the state that gaming's at the minute. Like, are we in a pretty good spot, or are there things you'd like to see games try?
We're in a better spot, definitely, for the conversation to be opened up. And I don't think that going forward, every single game needs to be about this subject, nor do I feel that. I just feel that in general, there needs to be better representation, and we're getting there. And it's a representation, and I do mean that in a blanket sense. I mean that in terms of your sexuality, in terms of your race and things like that. I do mean that we are getting there. But I feel like for every one of those, you can have your FIFAs and your Dooms and stuff like that, where you're just killing or just playing a game that isn't like...
Oh yeah, nothing should ever replace it. Really.
So I just feel like now is a better time than ever for independent developers to tell their stories. Celeste sold and reviewed really, really well.
Yeah.
So it's great to see that people will support this.
But even from last year, I mean, I can throw God of War up. Like, having just watched that documentary, like...
That is a tale of it, yeah.
Yeah, like breaking Kratos down, humanizing him. They did the same thing with Nathan Drake in Uncharted 4, like really, you know, showing that this character's motivations and the worries that they have, more so on the God of War sense. Like, Kratos is a broken man.
Yeah.
And I think that they try and, like, flesh out the human emotions, and it only makes that character stronger. I don't know if that's what you think about going forward.
Yeah, essentially, yeah. Just all of it's good. All of it. Give you more of everything. Over the past few years, we've seen, especially in like the indie space, them actually experimenting, like I said, with the mechanics and actual features as well as the story, which I think is, we're only just scratching the surface of that. I think there is so much more you could do with that.
Mm-hmm.
That I think, I like the idea of just more representation in general, like weave throughout the games, but then these specific sort of character studies like Hellblade, like that's so beneficial in the long run. And like the fact that games as a industry and a medium are so large and so expansive that there should be, you know, just the opportunity to do everything. Like you said, not everything needs to be this big explosive thing, and you can even weave things into there. But then on the other hand, whether it's AAA, whether it's indie, there is space for it. So we should absolutely embrace it.
Yeah,
definitely.
And I think, to hold it, like, again, just to roll that together into something like God of War, you can do a big AAA, like, you know, it's going to be played by millions of people, but you can still have those underlying messages that make you think of the more human aspects of it. And it's all the more richer because of it. So yes, so for now, this has been our first podcast for Mental Health Awareness, Raising Awareness Week on the What Culture Gaming podcast channel. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much, guys.
And Josh Brown.
Thank you. Bye.
And catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.